From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Mr. Rauner, as I introduced over 1,100 people here today, they are elected leaders from our union. Are they the union bosses you refer to? If not, who are the union bosses?
One's you. You are the most important profession in our society. You are more important than doctors, more important than lawyers, more important than accountants, than engineers, than accountants. You hold the future of America in your hands every day.
We cannot forget to make sure that we well fund the teachers who are making sure our children learn. And I believe in doing that, I am not going to do what they did in Wisconsin. My opponent's role model. We have over 2 million students in public schools in Illinois. I'm not going to charterize this system of education in Illinois.
That is some of the sound from a meeting at the Illinois Education Association last week in Chicago. Bruce Rauner and Governor Pat Quinn, and they were explaining some of their differences. And he used the line, we're not going to charterize the system of education in Illinois. We're going to talk today about why charter schools have become the center of some debate at the state capitol this year. That'll be coming up in the second half of the show. We'll get to some other issues taking place this week on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Joining us from Chicago, WUIS and IPR State House Bureau Chief Amanda Venicky. And for the first portion of the show, Chicago Public Radio reporter Tony Arnold. Tony, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And it seems like you have been involved with some of the more interesting things going on this week. And we'll talk about those. First, there was a legislative hearing this week on the issue of the state putting in some money for a Barack Obama Presidential Library and Museum, whichever location of the competing sites in Illinois would get it. This would put some money towards it. That had a little bit of wackiness in terms of the voting. I think there were 9 votes, yet only 5 people showed up to the meeting. So take us what the meeting was about a little more, and we'll go from there and tell us about what's going on with that.
Sure. The proposal itself, it's a bill just like any other bill introduced in the legislature. It would devote $100 million toward the construction of the Obama Library if Illinois were to get it. And it's sort of just designed to make this bid a little bit more competitive, because other states that like to lay claim to Barack Obama, like Hawaii and New York, where he went to college, have also apparently expressed interest in hosting this library. So this $100 million is to sort of make Illinois a little bit more competitive compared to those states. And so there was a hearing this week where Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel testified, and representatives from several universities in Chicago, including University of Chicago, University of Illinois at Chicago, Chicago State University. They all testified about not just the importance of hosting the university, but also just bringing it to Chicago. And in particular, a lot of them seem to say our campus is a good location for this. And so while they're trying to sort of bring a unified approach to bringing the library to Illinois, there's still a little bit of debate about where it would go and who can host this thing. And each makes their own case. Now, what you were getting to, this was labeled, this hearing, which went on for about an hour, this testimony, there were 5 representatives there, including Speaker Madigan. And
all Democrats.
All Democrats, I should say. And, you know, it's at the end, it was labeled ahead of time as what they call a subject matter hearing, which typically means that there's just going to be a discussion and no vote was taken. But at the very end of the hearing, they said, OK, we're going to do a vote now. And even though 5 people were in attendance, 9 ended up voting yes. Those 9 came from a meeting of the same committee from the previous day. That committee had met on a hearing on Wednesday on expanding gambling in Illinois. The same committee met on Thursday with almost virtually entirely different members, a different number of members also, on the Obama Library. And so they used the roll call. If you attended the meeting on Wednesday, you voted yes on the Obama Library, the $100 million for Obama Library.
I mean, to me, and so this was a – Democrats, again, were the only ones in attendance, and this was a decision basically that seemed to have been prompted by House Speaker Mike Madigan to go this route of taking the vote and using the prior day's attendance roll call. And I think that it's kind of hilariously symbolic, actually, that, you know, where Barack Obama got his start in politics is through Illinois and these sort of maneuvers that occur all the time in Springfield and in the General Assembly. And in this effort to get the monument to his presidency based in this state, there exactly. You go with how things all set up. But to me, it was not necessary. I don't know if the thought was to just take a vote while they were in Chicago, because Session will be back in Springfield, not the next week, but the next week after, or what. But there, I don't believe would be any sort of like imminent hurry to have done this. Or if there was, in terms of, hey, they know something about getting the library to come to Illinois, they could have done it when they were last in session. I mean, things were busy, but there's time to have moved that. And so why take that vote? And it's not as if Democrats don't have the supermajorities in both chambers of the General Assembly to have got that passed regardless. And, you know, I mean, this is a very public thing. So it's not like it was under the cover of darkness that there is an attempt to put this big amount of money toward the library, something which, yes, Republicans are opposed to. I guess what they didn't want to hear all of that in the newspapers, have an easy way for Republicans to come against it and say Illinois doesn't have money to be devoting to this. But it just seems so unnecessary.
Yeah, they still would have been making those arguments on the floor of the House, which this still has to get the approval for the House. Those arguments are still going to be made. And, you know, I talked to one of the representatives who's kind of the top Republican on this committee. His name's Ed Sullivan. He's from Chicago's northern suburbs. And he was basically saying he voted yes on the Obama Library because he attended Wednesday's hearing, just by showing up on Wednesday.
But he was not there on Thursday.
Only one representative actually went to both hearings. And so, you know, he was saying, you know, I'm not opposed to having an Obama Library. Actually, I think that'd be nice. But I don't want to use $100 million of state money for this. I think we can find some private money to pay for it. And so his argument is that he would have been a no vote, but now he's marked as this yes vote. He said that he's going to be filing a protest. It takes two members to file this protest. I don't know. It seems to me like that might be more of a symbolic thing. And I don't know if that's really going to do much to stop this from moving on to the House floor.
It's not going to do absolutely anything to stop it from moving to the House floor. Had any of the Republicans on the committee showed up at that particular
hearing,
they're
bad, Charlie.
And maybe it was just Madigan deciding, well, I'm going to have some fun at these guys' expense. I'm going to gig them. What happens frequently in Springfield in committee meetings, as you guys know who have covered them, there'll be a bill that will come up, and it doesn't seem to engender much opposition. And the sponsor will make the motion to recommend the bill for consideration by the full chamber. And the committee chairman will say, leave for the attendance roll call. And if there's no objection, then whoever showed up for the committee would be put down as favoring that motion. On the other hand, if there's some objection, then they actually call the roll. So had one of the Republicans been there, the Republican obviously would have objected to the attendance roll call. They would have taken, you know, they would have actually polled the members. Democrats have a 6-4 majority on that committee, and the bill would have been reported out 6 to however many, or however many Democrats were there. So it's not that the bill could not have been advanced were it not for this kind of sneaky trick. I mean, obviously it was going to get approved one way or the other.
Yeah. And so Representative Sullivan's point was that this is basically setting a bad precedent. It just kind of sets a bad tone, and it can make for a rockier next session, next part of the legislative
session. There are
session
rules. There's
the
parliamentary
month.
Procedure, and then when you get sneaky with it, it just, I think, gives a bad perception of government. To your point, though, Charlie, I think that when we're casting this, I guess we could call it blame on Democrats for going this route, again, as you noted, Republicans weren't there. This was a public hearing. They could have sent members to be part of it and to hear the discussion, and instead, with no GOP voice, this was allowed to happen. And I mean, again, Democrats, who's to say? I think there's a lot of talk that was not a good choice on the part of Democrats, just because when the mice are away, the cats can play, doesn't mean that they should, but the mice should have been there anyway.
Well, I would say that yeah, it was bad form on the Democrats. They shouldn't have done that. There was no need to do it other than to try and gig the Republicans. On the other hand, my guess is that there will not be another committee meeting at which at least one Republican is not present from here on out.
Probably. And a spokesman for Madigan says if there is a problem here and the complaints come about, that the committee may reconvene and vote again.
Yeah, and then they'll vote it out 6-4.
Because there is still this question of, does Illinois need to spend this money in order to get the library? And I do think it would be a huge embarrassment for the mayor, for the governor, if Obama were to choose instead potentially Hawaii or New York. So maybe this movement is afoot because somewhere there's gotten word that, hey, those are serious other contenders. And that would perhaps not engender a whole lot of goodwill for Obama and his adapted home state. So, or is this just a move for whatever reason that Democrats are doing, and that, again, this is money that is supposed to be used for construction infrastructure projects anyway. I think that there are plenty of projects, however, statewide, you know, schools, bridges that are faltering, what have you, that say, hey, no, $100 million, we want some. When presidential libraries now are primarily funded through private investments. And so, you know, the same people that have helped Obama ascend to the presidency will help that legacy live on by giving private donations.
Although
Illinois,
of
course, has funded the Springfield Library.
Too.
Well, and there is no way to pay for this yet, because if you recall in his budget address, the governor talked about wanting a new capital program, and this is what this library money would fall under. But he said, in essence, we're going to have a task force sit down and figure out how we're going to pay for it.
Tony Arnold, while we still have the pleasure of your company for a couple of more minutes, you got to see some court documents this week involving the lawmaker Derek Smith. Can you tell us an update on his case and what we heard from his attorneys here?
Sure. Derek Smith is a state representative. He's a Chicago Democrat. He represents parts of the west side and north side of Chicago. And he was arrested 2 years ago for allegedly taking a $7,000 bribe in exchange for writing a letter of recommendation for a grant application. And so there's been just a lot of motions for the last 2 years, just mostly the lawyers going back and forth. And finally, we got a pretty good sense of what's going on, what's been going on, especially when he was first arrested. Apparently, the prosecutors filed a motion basically saying, here's what he's been saying. Here's what he said after he was arrested to the FBI. And he talked at length after he had been read his rights, said that he was had the right to an attorney. He signed and initialed the paper. This is all from the FBI agents that he talked to. And then went on and talked about he repeatedly used the phrase, I effed up. He didn't use that phrase, but that's you can imagine what he said from there. And then he actually took agents to his home to get the money that he had allegedly taken, that was the bribe money, that what was left over that he hadn't already spent, and
tried to give it back
to them, and you get the sense that he was trying to downplay this entire thing, like, okay, I see, you know, I'm serious, see that you guys are serious here, but if we can keep this quiet, then maybe this will all go away. You get that impression that that's maybe what he was thinking. He even requested to have two black FBI agents go with him to his home because he thought that having two white FBI agents go with him would be more conspicuous. And so there's that finally that was made. His attorneys, you might imagine, are trying to actually get those comments not played at his trial,
strike them,
which is scheduled for next month.
To me, it just shows the naivete of Representative Smith for having taken this bribe in the first place, and how he thought, or maybe the suaviness of the FBI. And I thankfully have never had that experience, but you know, I've seen plenty of cop shows. I saw the Stuart Levine play where, you know, like they have the FBI agent in conversations where, all right, let's try this, and you know, trying to coax somebody into, hey, we're your friends, we can work with you, and kind of just the sly ways of going about that in order to trap somebody. I guess it's really cop show worthy.
And yeah, his arguments are that his attorney's arguments are that, well, he thought he was negotiating a plea deal. The U.S. the prosecutors say an attorney wasn't even in the room yet before he started saying, kind of admitting wrongdoing, saying I effed up, and taking them to his house to get the cash. So he hadn't, and even then, when a prosecutor finally did talk to him, all he did, they say, was read the sentencing guidelines for here's what you could be facing. That didn't actually enter any sort of negotiations going on. So that motion is going on, but his trial is up for next month.
And so he lost his primary, but he is still in office until January.
That's right. Yeah, he had
unless he's convicted. Once he's convicted, he's automatically removed from office if he is convicted.
Yeah, he has a very storied career. For those who don't know what happened to Derek Smith, he in just this few short years that he's been there, he actually, after he was arrested, he won the primary because Democrats said, vote for the guy that we know he's been arrested and accused of wrongdoing, but you should still vote for him because his opponent in that primary is actually a Republican. Vote for the Democrat. So that happened, and he won that first primary, but then he was actually kicked out of the House of Representatives because he wouldn't resign. And then because he had won the primary already, he was on the November ballot. He was elected then back to the House of Representatives after he had been kicked out. And then here we are 2 years
later. And got a bunch of support from the Democratic House Speaker and leader of the state party for this most recent primary, which he did end up losing. But again, he had a whole ton of money, over 50,000, I believe, that came from the House Speaker's.
Which is ironic because in the FBI filing this week, it says that he was really nervous about that first primary and really hard up for some campaign cash. And that was sort of the FBI saying that's the motivation for why he took that alleged bribe in the first place.
Tony Arnold, the WBEZ, I appreciate you stopping by the show for a while.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thanks. You're listening to State Week in Review. Up next, we talk about charter schools in Illinois.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, and now joining us for this portion of the show, WUIS reporter Rachel Otwell. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Nearly 20 years ago, the Illinois legislature, when it was under Republican control, passed an education overhaul. As part of that package, the legislature allowed for charter schools in Illinois. In the last decade, we've seen enrollment grow at those schools, and those who believe charter schools are an important part of the education mix feel they are under some attack at the legislature. As we heard at the beginning of the show, we heard Governor Pat Quinn say he wasn't going to charterize this system of education in Illinois. Rachel Otwell took a considerable amount of time and looked at the charter schools in Illinois. Can you talk about this, the growth in charter schools in Illinois, and maybe the hostile environment they're feeling at the state capitol right now?
Yeah, so in 2013, there's about 60,000 students in charter schools. A decade ago, that was only 13,000. And so the growth is substantial. Those numbers are continuing to grow. New schools are continuing to be chartered.
Mostly in the Chicago area.
Yeah, there's only 15 downstate. There's about 50 in Chicago. 145 schools, though, altogether, if you include campuses. And back around 2009, there was kind of a gentleman's handshake after these new caps were established on how many schools there could be, that there would be a moratorium. And we're just not going to deal with charter schools for a few years. Let's see how this works. And that has been lifted as of this year. So charter advocates are saying this is the most hostile environment they've ever seen for charter schools. This is the most threatening session yet. There's about 10 bills right now that they're worried about. A few of those have gotten out of the House. And we're kind of waiting to see right now exactly what's going to become of all of these bills.
And when you talk about those, what would be some of the significant action that somebody might be taking against charter schools?
So there's this Illinois Charter School Commission that people who support charter schools are very much in favor of because it's kind of an appeals board for charter schools. If local districts don't approve an application, the people wanting to charter that school can go to this commission instead. It's only been used a couple of times. They've only actually approved those applications a couple of times.
Overturning a local school board's decision.
Right. But, you know, the thought is if they get rid of this commission, it's going to make it harder for some of those schools to be because local districts sometimes see them as rivals is the thought.
Now, as I'll bring in the rest of the group back into the conversation, it is an issue in a way in the gubernatorial campaign. Certainly Bruce Rauner has been in an anti-union stance. Unions don't like charter schools typically. And we heard Governor Pat Quinn say he wasn't going to charterize this system of education. Is that what's creating this environment this year at the state capitol, do you think, Charlie?
No, I think this concern has been going on all along because basically a charter school is funded with public school dollars, but it doesn't have to conform to the same rules and regulations and mandates that a typical public school does. What happens, as Rachel suggested, a group of people want to form a charter school, go to the local school board and say, here is our plan for this school. Sometimes they're proposing to teach a particular curriculum with an emphasis, say, on science and math, or an emphasis on performing arts, or we're going to work with kids who have difficulties in a regular classroom. And then the local school board gives their consent, and money that normally would go to the other schools in the district, that money will be forwarded on to the charter school to pay its expenses. And what the local schools are complaining about is that the charters, the one allegation is that the charters kind of get to cherry pick. They take the best students. They don't deal with the more difficult kids. They don't deal with kids who have special needs. They don't deal with kids, by and large, who are English language learners. There's all these kinds of criticism. And they take money away from our ability to educate kids in the regular classroom. That's kind of the argument against the charters. And as Rachel suggested, it's been very popular in Chicago. And as a matter of fact, the last several times the legislation has been changed to increase the numbers of charters that are available, it's only been for the Chicago portion of the program. Downstate has very few, and there hasn't been that much interest downstate in creating these things or in the suburbs.
And I mean, so you look at the charter school movement, and there's so much to go there in terms of for better, for worse. Are they helping? I know there have been studies recently that challenge the thought that charter schools are more successful than public schools. And so that's playing into the climate here. I do think that whereas all of what is going on in this group of this legislation is not being driven by the governor's race, that is an interesting angle. First of all, you have, I think, frustration. Whereas Quinn says he doesn't want to charterize, he does have a lieutenant governor pick in Paul Vallis who had very much backed charters. And so that has been an area of consternation for supporters.
In Chicago.
And it was actually the law that created charter schools in Illinois is what really brought Paul Vallis into prominence and power for his Chicago school leadership roles.
And now you have the Quinn campaign trying to kind of move away from that because, of course, you have Rauner who has a charter school in his name, literally, and who has gotten some attention as well for the Noble Network and his involvement of those charter schools and, for example, its use that it is now doing away with of charging students fees. So generally you have perhaps low-income students that are going to these schools, but nonetheless charging them fees for breaking the rules and that sort of thing that has gotten some attention. Just and Rauner, who, as we all know, had said he was anti-government union bosses, trying to pivot away from that, as we heard in those remarks early on. But the teachers groups not really loving that at all because they, of course, tend to be unions against charter schools. Interestingly, you are seeing, however, charter schools begin to unionize. And there are some of those schools where the teachers at charters are now member of teachers unions.
And those unions are, though, usually self-contained. They might be affiliated with the two biggest unions in the state, but by and large, that's not what's happening here. And the biggest critics have been unions. But what's interesting, in the State House, while doing this, I thought there would be this big rift. People would just be, you know, completely criticizing charter schools, you know, during these debates. But that's not really what's happening. Even the people who are sponsoring this legislation are saying, look, we're not against charter schools. We just want to make sure they're serving kids, you know, the best way they possibly can. People who support charter schools are saying, well, we are, you know, most of these students are low income. The vast majority are minority. So, but the contention here seems to be, whatever it is, it's not really being clarified, I guess, to say the least. You know, people are still saying,
it's
well,
the careful dance that politicians always play.
So they're saying, well, I still support charter schools. We just want local control, or we just want to make sure kids are getting the best education. Nobody's coming out here and saying, I want to kill charter schools. They're not working. We're done with them.
Do you think that we will, and charter schools, you have mentioned in your reporting, they fear that what this will do, something will pass this year that will not put them out of business, but just hinder their growth and that they'll kind of be left where they are now. Charlie, do you see substantive legislation? Do you see things setting up that something would pass that charter schools would find, the proponents would find damaging?
I don't think anything that would severely damage them will pass. And again, this is kind of more a Chicago issue than it is elsewhere in the state. And part of the problem in Chicago is that the Chicago Public Schools closed a large number of school buildings for this school year and moved the kids elsewhere. And the parents of a lot of those children didn't like those closures, didn't like the fact that now my son or daughter is going to have to go to this other school, maybe go across some rival gang's turf. And their anger is just magnified by the fact that now it appears some of these buildings are going to be given over to charter schools, which their students may not be able to get into.
In just a very brief time, if you can, less than a minute, if you can just quick give us a couple of pieces of research that have been out there on the success of charter schools or non-success.
So looking at the data here is not necessarily the most meaningful conclusions, but for one example, the state says that charter schools are not as successful at graduating high school students. But when you consider most students are in Chicago and you look at the graduation rates there, those rates are already lower. So we don't really know what that means. And Stanford University did a study that said students at charter schools do learn 7 days worth of more information than the traditional school student, whatever that means. So it's not, again, as I've learned this issue is, it's not cut and dry.
That's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Tony Arnold of WBEZ and Rachel Otwell of WUIS for joining us today. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.